Show with John Morgan. This is episode number 10. My name is John Morgan, and with me, finally again, cold coffee is in the house with
yes,
me. And when I say
10.
In the house, I should say out of the house, I guess.
Yes, nice little courtyard, you know.
Yeah, let's set it up. Just so you know, we are in New Orleans, of course, for UFC Fight Night 68, Boach versus Henderson this week. And we decided, hey, let's do something a little different. Let's just get out. Let's get on Bourbon Street. And let's do a little bar hopping, do a little walking down the French Quarter, and we'll stop at a couple of places yeah, along the way and just kind of keep it going.
This is either going to be the greatest idea ever, or it's going to be a total shit show by the time we get to bar number two or location number three. I mean, regardless of what makes it into the show, because we can only have so many segments in a show, but let it be known that many more than – three or four bars is probably going to be hit
tonight.
That's
the plan. And I guess we should also say that it's been a busy day as we tape this.
Yes.
You know, we had open workouts this morning, Ultimate Media Day this afternoon. And the first thing we did once we got out on Bourbon Street was we stopped at Old Absinthe House, and or as our Uber driver called it, Old Absentee.
Absentee.
Absentee. House was fine. Got no problem with that. Maybe we're just saying it wrong.
Yeah, we might be saying it wrong. They've been saying it wrong for hundreds of years, I guess.
And the first thing we did, being the intelligent decision makers that we are, we said, well, we're at Old Absinthe House. We haven't eaten all day long. We should start out by having some absinthe, which
it
was either brilliant on our part and the creative juices are going to flow or just stupid.
Yes, and I wish I could say the names better. I don't know. The one was a Pernod or Pernod, P-E-R-N-O-D, which was a – clocked in at a 136 proof. And then the other one was this is the one I can't remember, Chrissy something or a chandelier or something, or I don't know, but it had a lovely blue label of the goddess flying out of the side of the label or whatever, and that was a 106 proof.
Not a bad way to start the night. Now we got a couple of cold beers in front of us here, a couple of frosty beverages in a plastic cup, and we're actually on the patio here at Tony Moran's. Our man George has been taking care of us since we sat down. This is a sharp dressed man, by the way.
Yes.
Got
great
the nice hat. Oh, can't beat him, man.
I need to get one of those hats before I leave.
So, listen, it's been a couple weeks since we've seen each other. Just real quick, before we talk about what we've seen in New Orleans this week, I wanted to wrap up real quick. I was in Brazil last week. You were in Milwaukee.
Yep.
And people have already known a little bit of what I saw in Brazil, because I either intelligently or very dumbly decided to do a drunken podcast from the Goiânia airport. Which
I think came out very, very well.
I think so. There may have been a few too many mention of Ryan Jimmo's testicles.
And the handling.
The
poor guy that got berated. The best part is that as you're telling the story, you know, I think it comes out that the guy's sitting right there.
Yeah.
He's literally feet away.
Yeah.
Like, this poor bastard has to hear you talking about his handling of the balls.
He was a fantastic sport. A fantastic sport. But so that was a lot of fun. But, you know, earlier in the day, one story I wanted to share real quick. Earlier in the day, before we went to the airport, actually, you know, work was done, got a little bit of sleep, and then I had some time to kill in the afternoon and went back to the host hotel, had a few cocktails, and had a chance to sit outside. And you know, Damon Jackson, obviously, we spent some time with him on the trip down to Brazil and, of course, all through fight week. And he was on the show last week. And I was able to go out by the pool on Sunday afternoon. And his wife, who had flown down from Dallas, and his sister were actually both kind of out there, you know, just having a cocktail or whatever. And really being kind of sad. I mean, they flew down to Brazil and obviously saw somebody they cared about and loved lose a fight. And, man, it was just such a powerful reminder of what these guys sacrifice and what they do. You know, I think sometimes we get so involved in the fights themselves and all the buildup and all that stuff. Man, the aftermath sometimes is tough, man. This sport is the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. And, you know, it's that funny thing. On Sunday morning, half the guys you run into are on cloud nine and the other half are just hating life.
Banged up, sad. And you're right. I think we get so caught up in it, and you think about, oh, yes, it's entertainment. They're here to entertain and this. But on the sad side of the entertainment, you know, is the fact that, yes, somebody's actually losing. Somebody worked their asses off and had people put all this time and effort, and they lost as well, you know. And then to see the aftermath of, let alone, it wasn't like they just went down the street to watch their buddy. Literally to go to another country and watch, and you put all that effort and you put all – you know how much the hopes and desires and what these wins do for each fighter. And so when it doesn't happen, it's tough to see somebody's heartbreak. I mean, and it's a stark reminder, and that's why I think when you see the guys that take it and are the very humble about it when they get the victories and whatnot, because they understand most of them have tasted defeat, and you know, it's a good reminder, because I think that's the thing. You go and you see so many things, you know, and you can almost take it for granted that, yeah, all this, we're going to see a great show, we're going to do this, but yeah, you're right. I mean, on the other half is that, you know, a whole lot of hearts break. There's 12 fights that night. 12 people are leaving home heartbroken.
Yep.
You know, and
with half a paycheck.
And with half a paycheck.
It's rough, man. It's rough. You know, it's just a reminder what the sport, why I do think, I think this is the greatest sport on the face of the planet. And I don't know, it's just sometimes I think about, like, the, you know, the message board commenters and the you know, the this guy sucks and that guy's terrible, yeah, and the hatred, and like, man, you kind of forget the human element of the sport, which is, I mean, this guy's got kids and, you know, there's his wife and there's his sister and all the sacrifices they've all made, you know, yeah, not just the fighter themselves, but the, yep, support group around them, and then to come up short, you know, it's rough, man.
You're
so
right.
just a little something, kind of a stark reminder.
It's funny, you're talking about how I get pissed off when somebody makes a comment about how, oh, man, why didn't you take a shot of this right here, you motherfucker, like setting up like a tripod, which you're like, don't read the comments, let alone somebody that's put their heart and soul and their blood, sweat, and literally blood, sweat, and tears on the line, and then somebody makes a fucking snide-ass comment. It's,
yeah,
like, fuck you.
Yep.
I would beat you down in the street with your fucking comment, you know?
Well, I was in Brazil. You were in Milwaukee. You and Ben Folks,
yes,
the Honorable Ben Folks, went
the honorable.
And went to Milwaukee and went to Rufus Sport. And then you took a little day trip to Kenosha as well to talk to Ben Rothwell. So just, yep, wanted to get your thoughts real quick as we get things started. Rufus Sport, give us your impressions of the gym itself. First time in the gym?
It was the first time in the gym, and you know, and it's funny, you know, and what I've seen when we go to a lot of these gyms. They have these huge names, and you never know what you're going to expect. So we're pulling up, and one, we actually missed it when we first went there. We went on the GPS. We're looking for a big building. You're looking for a big sign. You're like, all right, it's right here. GPS is right here. We're like, well, shit, we must have missed it. How the fuck did we miss it? You know, and we're taking a back road, cutting underneath, like, the bank teller thing, and we're getting back into the parking lot, and it's like, all right, it says it's right here. And lo and behold, there's this little itty-bitty sign right next to literally, like, a bank teller thing, saying how Rufus Sport's right there. And, you know, so you got such a big, big name with this little sign, and you walk in and you go down to the basement, but then it opens up into this gym, and you can just tell that it's all about business. You know, it was wonderful. It was great facilities. I mean, Duke Rufus is an outstanding coach. I mean, you saw the guys there. Ben Askren was there this day. Sergio Pettis was there. Chico. I mean, you name it. But it was amazing. It was neat to see, and they work hard down there. Just like we've been fortunate enough to go to ATT and watch them train. We got to go see the Black Zillions, and this was another instance of a hardworking gym with an incredible coach doing good work. I mean, yeah, granted, they didn't have the full stable of their guys there. You know, guys were out with injury. Other guys were just off this particular day. But it was amazing. It was neat to see, and we got to speak with some fighters, you know, and most of those interviews are up on MMAJunkie.com.
And we got,
but there's still
coming.
A few. There's still a few in the reserves waiting to go.
Yeah, some great work for sure. One of the noticeable absentees was Anthony Pettis.
Yes.
And I thought this was odd. I talked to you about this, and I hope it's okay that we're sharing this, but I guess, you know, some of the guys told you that he didn't want to be around because he's, I guess, for lack of a better word, a little bit embarrassed about the fact that he got hurt in training?
You know, I think that's one of the things. I think there was a lot of a topic going on where people were saying, oh, you know, fighters are getting hurt at Rufus, you know, Sport, you know, and maybe that talk happened after the Anthony. I'm not quite sure the timeline of things. But, yeah, from what we kind of gauged was, like, you know, he was a champ. One, partially he just also suffered a loss. He lost the belt.
Right.
And then, you know, to rub salt on a wound, he's injured, you know, in training after the fact. It was, like, immediately after the fact. But, yeah, we kind of got the gist was that he was feeling like he was going to be around. I'm sure they talked that we were coming down there and doing stuff.
Right.
And last thing you want to do is come down when you're feeling a little bit down and out.
You just have to deal with
media and
answer questions.
Have somebody stick a fucking camera and a mic in your face,
yeah,
and say, hey, tell me how you're feeling.
Yeah.
If I could
pretty
guess,
crappy,
I would probably say, hey, shit sucks right now, you know. But, you know, wishing the best. It would be nice if we could see him. But it was great seeing his brother. Sergio was doing some good work. I mean, every time I see that cat, he gets better and better and better. He was in there throwing with Chico and Camus.
Mm-hmm.
Chico was fucking going at him. you know, and it was great. And then you see Ben Askren going at it, and Ben was like a beast down there. That's the first time I personally have seen him doing work down here.
Right.
And, like, you know, I, you know, pardon my ignorance, didn't know the full pedigree of his wrestling skills and everything. And literally just watching somebody be so strong in one particular skill, be able to dominate fighters so much to where, you know, Pettis says, you know, these guys have these skills and want to be able to fucking throttle you and kick you and punch you. But if you can't get this motherfucker off of you,
it's tough.
Holy shit. I was super, super impressed with how Ben was working, but just how the other guys were as well. But,
Yeah, you know, another big name, obviously, that wasn't there, and we found out later why. We weren't able to be told at the time, but CM Punk wasn't there.
Yes.
Phil Brooks was down in Arizona, actually, at the Exos Training Center, which Justin Park, we were spread all over the place on the MMA Junkie team.
Literally worldwide.
Yeah,
that day.
Justin Park was down there filming those guys at the Exos Training Center, which is a new partner. Excuse me. We'll have that video up very soon as well and give you some behind the scenes there. You know, that was all announced, obviously, at the big press conference earlier this week. I'm curious, though. Surely I know that there was some conversation or something. I mean, was anything brought up about CM Punk? Did you hear anything about the progress of CM Punk? Because I know people want to know what's going on with CM Punk.
They did, and I don't want to kind of just roughly summarize it. I mean, I think, you know, you guys definitely got to pay attention when we put those interviews out because Duke talks about it, Sergio talks about it, Ben talks about it. Everybody said the progress is moving on, that he works as hard as everybody. One thing I did take away that did stick in my head was that CM takes this mindset, or Phil, I got to get used to that. He has a real name.
I don't know what to call him
yet. I know. CM, I'm like, should I call him C? I mean, is it C? And M's like the middle initial, but regardless. But he takes this whole, what I love about, I love martial arts movies. I don't know if you love martial arts movies, but all the other cool little martial arts movie that we have is that you see these guys that are learning their skills, and as they're coming up, they take on the master level, and then there's the guys learning. And the guys learning do all the little itty-bitty steps up until that point. So what CM's been doing when he's going, he insists that after every workout, every practice, that he mops the mats. So there are other guys, I'm sure, helping because there's quite a bit of mats to actually do, but he goes through there and mops the mats at the end of workouts at every time. But they said he's coming along. They said he works as hard as anybody else is, that his training's coming, he's doing the right things. And from what they said, he's going to do work and he's going to win. He's going to do some wins. I mean, nobody knows who he's going to be up against, but I think they trust in the fact that USC is going to put him against somebody that he's matched, you know, equally with. And if it plays out how they said he's been working, he's going to get wins.
Awesome. That's a great story, man. I'm really interested to hear that. And that's all I've gathered is that the guy seems to be putting in the work. So good stopping point there. I've got a little bit more I want to ask you about.
We got some food in front of us.
But
we've been starving all day.
We've got a fried seafood platter. We've got some, crawfish bisque?
It's crawfish and corn bisque. How can you say no to that? Yeah. Is that how most people take it?
Some with fresh ground pepper would be good.
Yes.
We need a couple more beers too, right?
Yes. Can we get those?
What
from
do you have?
Too?
You have. I'm drinking Coors Light. Is that
Stella?
All right?
Stella. You can't get Stella. Even better. Fucking love Peroni.
Yep. Thank you very much. So as good a place as any to stop right there. We got more frosty beverages on the way. We got a little bit of food in front of us. We're going to do that, and we'll pick back up from somewhere else in the French Quarter.
I love it.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 10. We are in New Orleans, and Cole Coffey, I don't know what else we can say except that things are progressing very quickly here. We took a little break for dinner, and then we walked down the street to meet some friends, and before you know it, we are on a rooftop
the place that everybody wants to be when they come to New Orleans.
Babe's Cabaret and Nightclub. It is the type of establishment where young women
I was like, what is the best way? They showcase what your mama gave you.
They are big fans of showcasing what their mothers gave them. And very MMA friendly. I mean, we walked in the door. We met a couple of friends who said, "Hey, come meet us. Here's where we're at. There's a group of people." And we thought, man, there's no way they're going to let us tape a podcast segment right. while we're in there. As it turns out, the staff here is extremely MMA friendly. They love
extremely
MMA.
MMA friendly. So before we even forget to say it, when this comes out, it's Friday night. Hey, everybody, from what we've been told, this place is off the hook tomorrow, let alone Bourbon Street, let alone the French Quarter, let alone all these, you know, establishments. But you guys got to get down here. Come to Babes. It's worth the trip. And what better way to have a good night and prepare for some fights on Saturday?
Yeah, let them know you're a UFC fan. They'll take good care of you. They've got this interesting drink. It's kind of their signature
yes.
drink. It's a frozen Angry Orchard apple cider.
Yeah, which was like one flavor. I think you said they had a pear version and then like the apple version.
But then
the apple
it also has Fireball in there as well. So
yeah,
it's like an adult slushy.
An adult slushy.
All right.
It's so absolutely delicious.
That's where we are. Our buddies are over here throwing beads off the balcony.
Yeah, they got beads.
There's a crowd gathering below us. This is everything I thought it would be and more, and we're only in segment number two.
Right.
So I'm not even sure. We might just have to wrap it up here because I'm not sure we can beat this place.
I know. What I love about it, and if you guys haven't been down to New Orleans, you haven't seen the thing, when they have the balconies, everybody's walking down below, but you see these balconies and everybody's sitting over the balconies. They're having their drinks and you're looking down. And then ultimately, you catcall to the women, to the guys. You know, if it's a girl, yell at the dude, say, "Hey, show me a little something," and vice versa if you're the guys. You know, it's part of the whole mystique down here, you know, and we're getting to do a little bit of that as well as tape the MMA Roadshow podcast.
Absolutely.
How good is life?
You can't beat it.
Wonderful.
Life is good right now. So when we left off, we were finishing up your trip in Wisconsin. I did want to ask you one more thing about Rufus Sport, and I should have probably cleared it with you, but we were distracted earlier when we were down on the lower level. You know, I don't know if you can how much detail you can talk about this. You know, you and I talked about in the Florida trip, when we're invited into these gyms, there's a little bit of a degree of respect that comes with it as well.
Sure.
You're kind of, you know, people are peeling back the curtain for you. They're letting you sleep behind. But you shared a story with me where I guess you guys did see kind of a training injury happen there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this has been so much of a discussion lately. And I don't want you to share the name of the fighter, and I'm not asking for that, but I guess just tell me kind of what you saw, what the attitude was, because, I mean, there just seems to be so much focus right now on how guys are training and how to keep them healthy.
Right. And it wasn't like, you know, we saw something like guys were going hard and, like, we're actively trying to do something, you know. And it happened to, you know, I caught it off the side of my view when I saw it. Ben was there, and Ben got a better view of it. But it was two guys that were, you know, actively doing some wrestling, and one of the gentlemen, I'm not sure how the full thing happened, but kind of rolled his ankle a little bit. You know, you heard a little pop and whatnot. But, yeah, we had talked beforehand about how a lot of gyms, they go hard, you know, and you kind of have to. You know, just like this gentleman I spoke to earlier tonight, and, you know, George at Tony's was saying you were in the restroom when he was chatting about it. But it was talking about how, you know, when these karate guys, you know, back in the 70s or whatnot were learning how to throw kicks and learning how to do whatever, but you had to pull your punch. You weren't supposed to hurt this guy.
Right.
And he said, but when it gets in time to do a fight, all you know how to do is pull a punch, which is kind of leads to the fact that right now when you go to MMA, you got to go hard. You got to go pretty darn close to hard, if not hard.
Right.
Just for the fact that you got to know how to be able to punch. You got to be able to take a punch. So in that sort of things, and we spoke with Duke after the fact that accidents happen. It's not about a matter of like, hey, guys, you know, our gym, we're not taking the steps to protect fighters or whatnot. No, all these motherfuckers had headgears on. They all do all the right things. But it's not like you can have fucking shit on. You can't be practicing with bubble wrap all around. And it happens, you know. And it's unfortunate. But as soon as the guy, you know what happened? They pulled him out of it. Everybody took a moment. You know, he laid down. They, you know, let the swelling try to go down. And what I thought was awesome about, you know, things, and I was talking with you earlier, is that, you know, the first thing I remember seeing off the side, and maybe I was wrong at the time, but it wasn't like they pulled off this fancy like ice pack. It was like literally looked like frozen peas or like frozen vegetables or something. And I was like, I would want nothing else. Like that was like the perfect thing. But yeah, it's unfortunate that the incident did happen. But, you know, it was nothing about the lines of that they were not taking care. It was just the unfortunate of guys, when you're doing wrestling, you might have a guy that's better than another guy.
Yeah.
And another guy maybe overextends himself and puts him in a position, doesn't have the right foot position, and something gave, you know. So
it's funny, you know, I spoke with Cain Velasquez earlier this week. You know, we'll be in Mexico City next week for his title shot, but spoke to him and just asked him kind of a similar thing, because it's funny. You know, a few weeks back, or I guess it was way back in April, you know, I went up to San Jose for the day. We had a media day up there, and he got cut like 30 seconds into practice. It was more like 10 seconds into practice. But, and I asked him, you know, I know how big this fight is and how much you're trying to get back. Like, did you do anything to stay careful and to do something different? And exactly what you said. It's like, listen, man, it's the fight game. You got to go. The only way you get ready is you got to go. It's like, you know, you hope that you don't get hurt. You know, you try to train smart, but you still got to train. So, you know, I think a little bit of it's inevitable. I mean, I think guys are learning to do things a little bit smarter, a little bit more intelligently, but those things happen. So from there, you guys took, after your Rufus Sport trip, you guys took a trip to Kenosha, Wisconsin to see Ben Rothwell. I guess, first of all, I mean, how long was the drive? How far away was that? And you guys put out some fantastic pieces. If you're listening to this podcast and you haven't seen – read the piece with Ben Rothwell that Ben Folks wrote, and then also the videos that you cut and produced that I thought were excellent accompaniments to it. Definitely do that. Seek that out on MMA Junkie. But just give us some insight. What was the trip like to Kenosha, Wisconsin, and what was it like? I mean, Ben Rothwell, a guy that's been around the game for a long time, a guy that I think is extremely self-evident, self-aware. I think he's always very open and honest about his emotions. I won't even say to a fault, but I mean, yeah, he'll share everything with you. So just give me your overall impressions.
Sure. Well, and it's funny enough, and being a guy that happens to love a good TV show that's about stoners and whatnot, the only thing that first stuck in my head when I'm thinking of Kenosha, I'm like, why do I know Kenosha? You know, besides, I do have some family up there, but they're not living in Kenosha, but it's the 70s show. It's based on a fictional town that's nearby Kenosha, Wisconsin. So I meant to ask Ben about that when I got there, but of course, it slips your mind, like, you know, all those sort of things do. Sure. But it was about an hour drive, you know, maybe a little bit less from where we were at Duke's gym. You know, and it was, you know, we had to take a couple little side turns because it was like one of those things that's like just off of the road, that the highway that was leading into the area. You know, nice little strip mall area, whatever. A nice big sign, Rothwell MMA, you know, so good on him. But it was great. I mean, you walk into it, and it opens up, and you have a giant, the mat floor space there, and then the separate room had the hanging bags and another little mix, you know, MMA floor where they could go and do stuff. But it was great. We were welcomed warmly by his wonderful wife who brought us in and kind of gave us the layout of the land until Ben got there. And it was great. Gave us a rundown. Ben took us on a little journey through time to see the different shadow boxes that he created. Which is neat, you know, and if you haven't seen a little piece of that, we did a little video on that that's on MMA Junkie as well, that detailed his time from the IFL through various other organizations, and then ultimately ended with his last fight with Overeem, and it was great. The stories were wonderful, and it was neat to hear him kind of explain the different things, because it went through the whole gamut. He lost a friend of his, and that's detailed in one
that
of these boxes.
That was very intense.
You know, I mean, it was unique. I mean, it was wonderful.
I would be remiss if I didn't say that some of our friends behind you are getting a little
Speaking
bit rowdy
of the fight
with Beads.
Game, you know, they're kind of pelting some people. We might see some action happen before long. Unfortunately.
Yeah, when you're on a balcony, it's to playfully toss the beads and to have fun and enjoy the party. This is not an attacking position in war,
yes.
Where you're to pelt down.
I was gonna say in war, this would be a great position. You always want to attack from a higher elevation, you know.
Some of our friends have imbibed a cocktail or two this evening and seem to be getting a little aggressive with the beads. So we'll hope that everyone else around them can let them know the etiquette of the bead.
But if it does happen, we will detail it on this podcast as it happens.
As we might be running down the street here in a moment with people coming up here to attack us. Fortunately, we are in a secure location. The folks at Babes have a nice security staff down below, and they can probably keep us safe.
Thank you, Babes. And again, if you guys are down here this evening or in future events, they are MMA friendly. They, you know, they have sports TV on. So maybe we'll see a fight. Maybe someone in the Fox cards or something.
A talented staff.
Yes.
A very friendly.
There's lots of talent here.
Very friendly people.
There's lots of talent.
Ben Rothwell, Matt Mitrione fight this weekend. You know, it's fun because, you know, we'll start to get to New Orleans in just a moment, kind of what we've been down here. But since you guys kind of got the New Orleans week started there in Wisconsin, man, it's interesting talking to both those guys. And a big fight for both guys. Neither one of them at the top right now. But, you know, Ben Rothwell, a guy that's certainly been around for a long time, you go through his resume, and I think it's easy to forget what he accomplished and what he's done because, you know, he did it in smaller organizations, and he doesn't necessarily fight as frequently as I think he'd like to. And then, of course, Matt Mitrione, a guy that we've seen grow up right in front of our eyes and seen his entire career, you know. And a big fight, I think, for both guys. And I think this whole card is slipping a little bit under the radar.
Sure.
But I think this is a huge fight for both of those men.
What's funny is, you know, it's almost like a clash of different personalities. You have a guy like Ben who made a point to say, I don't like to talk about my fights. Let my fights dictate what's going to be said. He's like, I'm building a highlight reel. But, you know, you go back and look at the things, and it's, yeah, it's knockout after devastating knockout. He's like, I don't need to – to quote him, he's like, I'm not these like these one of these little Conor McGregors that needs to talk up a game. He's like, I got a highlight reel that speaks for itself.
Yep.
You know, you play that, and then they're going to want to come watch my fight. And you got a guy like Matt Mitrione, even though he hasn't been in the game that long, can talk it just about as good as anybody. So you got like the two different things. But when it comes down to it, you got two big guys that are ready to throw down, that are not afraid to walk forward. And, you know, I know we say it a lot of times, you know, like when you say, oh, and I don't want to jinx it, you know, and you say, oh, this is not going to make it, you know, three rounds. This is not going to make it three rounds.
I
and
agree.
I hope I did not jinx it or whatever. But these are two guys that are not afraid to throw down. We know Ben's going to go in there. And I know Matt is confident enough in his skills that he's going to walk forward as well. And I think it's going to be a fucking fabulous fight to watch.
I think so, too. I think there's a lot of fights in this card. They're going to be a lot of fun. So, well, that kind of gets you caught up on what we've been doing. Then on Wednesday, we came to New Orleans. Obviously, as we said, on Bourbon Street right now, looking up and down the famous, famous Bourbon Street in the French Quarter. Honestly, cannot think of a better place to be.
It's hard to keep on point of the podcast when you got all this going on. This is like sensory overload.
It really is
right
sensory
now.
Overload. I think we should get some kind of award just for the fact that we can pull this off. Literally, I mean, this is one of my favorite pieces of real estate in the entire world. I love this.
There's a guy down here down below. Somebody's got giant parrots.
Giant parrots. Just taking pictures of people with giant parrots. Obviously, the people just milling about everywhere. Some of them stumbling a little bit for whatever reason it may be. Obviously, maybe. Oh, yeah. Two people squaring off there. Is that a real fight?
Oh, that is a real fight.
Yes.
All right, so the guy in the red.
On the MMA Roadshow, we now have two gentlemen throwing down. Oh, my goodness.
There's no security, really, to get in between it.
Uh-oh. It's a man in a red shirt, a man in a white shirt. They're throwing down.
Dana White
likes to say, I don't see anybody watching baseball right now. I don't see anybody watching basketball. Everybody has stopped to watch these two gentlemen in the middle of the street. Now, I'm not seeing security anywhere. The technique is not necessarily the best.
Oh, the guy in the white. And then it just stops like that.
Police rolled up and they just stopped?
And then it just stops like that. How does it stop like that?
I guess that is one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen in my life.
If I could somehow.
I mean, they're going, oh, yeah, because there's the police right there. Police have walked up. The two men that threw down had not reached a resolution. They were firing punches. To varying degrees of success, and then
like
the police walked up, and now they're arresting someone else that wasn't even involved.
No, there was another gentleman that was on the ground over to the side while those two were squaring down. But it was almost like they're like, "Oh, I've tasted your power, you tasted my power, fuck."
And then they just walked away.
They're like, "This isn't ending." They're like, let's just kind of walk away." And the other guy didn't sucker punch him, didn't whatever. He was just kind of like, "Oh, hey, I didn't want to keep going." Either.
That was the most bizarre. They were throwing down, and then I guess somebody alerted and the police were walking up, and they just broke apart, and they were like, just immediately struck, you know, I'm cool, everything's good.
Yeah, it's like what you see in a movie where they're like, oh no, officer, yeah, no, this is my buddy. We're just hanging out, just doing whatever.
All right,
wow,
well,
you see
these
all
things
kinds
happen
of
on
shit
the MMA Roadshow. These things happen on the MMA Roadshow.
And I admit, I'm not a great play-by-play caller like your recent guest, John Anik, you know, so.
Had we had John Anik
had
as a guest,
we had John
Anik
and Brian Stan, you know, that would have been pretty spectacular.
All right. Well, you know, a good place to stop. I'll tell you what, we're going to move on here shortly. We have to move on. We've brought you live action from the fights. I will say this. We flew into New Orleans on Wednesday. We, of course, are not staying at the Hyatt Regency, which is the host hotel. The MMA Roadshow doesn't roll quite that fat. We're at the Residence Inn a little bit down the street. A fine property. No issues with that, but that is the host hotel.
Besides the guys that started playing basketball at 8 a.m. outside the window. But
shall we just say, what are the odds that the UFC host hotel would also be hosting a pole dancers convention?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what if it was like a convention to like learn and pass on the messages. Like somebody was like, "Hey, I have skills. I should share these skills," but not just at a regular like seedy hotel. They're like at one of the finest hotels here in town. We're gonna put on, so you know it's quality.
Have you gathered? Is this like yes? The sirens are coming in now. have you noticed? Is this a legitimate like jazzercise pole dancers convention?
Because
many of the young ladies that I've seen walking around the hotel have been, we'll say, mildly attractive.
Yes, very fit. And I think that whatever that workout, you know, I think it's right there with CrossFit. You know, it should become a bigger thing like CrossFit. And I think
So is this a strippers convention or is this just like...
I thought it was like an exercise thing, but maybe it was a strippers. Who knows? We should ponder on that.
All right. Well, the police are showing up. This fine gentleman has got a very nice suit on. That's a Conor McGregor-esque suit with his young lady in the pink dress there as the police roll right by him. The fighting has ceased. Now there's like 10 cops outside. Now, I should also mention none of this is taking place at Babes. This is across the street.
Yes.
At a much lesser establishment. This is why
All
I know is if you find yourself on Bourbon Street and you're in need of the type of establishment that Babes is, you should go to Babes.
You should go to Babes.
Because if not, you end up fighting on the street.
I'll tell you one thing. I'm in love with these little frosty-ass Apple Orchard drinks.
Get you an Apple Orchard.
He said he had the rights to the machine or the patent.
That's right.
The machine
yeah, that's right.
Something.
No, he has the distribution rights.
The distribution rights.
So he's the
You're
only
not going to find this tasty beverage anywhere else in New Orleans except for Babes.
Frozen Apple Orchard and Fireball.
Yes.
It's fantastic.
MMA Roadshow approved.
MMA Roadshow approved. All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to finish up these cocktails. I have no idea how in the hell we're going to top this for another spot.
How do you follow up?
But we've got
I feel like – I know we were talking about Milwaukee, but all I feel like I said was boobs, 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 fight, fight, fight. And it was a great stuff. So before we end on that thing, make sure you do go back and check out the footage on MMA Junkie. They were great stories. And we thank Ben and his family and Duke Rufus for inviting us into those gyms. We had some great content.
All right. Very cool stuff. We're going to take a quick break, find another place. Obviously not as fantastic as this, but another place nonetheless.
Boobs,
and
boobs,
and we'll talk
fight,
about
fight,
what we've
fight.
Seen in New Orleans. Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. Things are carrying on nicely here in New Orleans. This is John Morgan here. My man Cole Coffey is with me. Let's reset the scene. Again, we have found a new location. Brandon, our man over at Babes, was nice enough to escort us around the corner to a local spot here, Three-Legged Dog, a little bar on Burgundy. Make sure you get it right.
Burgundy,
the local
not,
say
not Burgundy.
It's not Burgundy. You will look like a chump if you say that. It is Burgundy.
Yes. Thank you, Brandon, one of the other wonderful staff there at Babes who took care of us.
He did good. And then, not only that, after giving us the VIP treatment, am I of the understanding that, first of all, we walked in and any place that has a bartender named Lunchbox.
Lunchbox.
You know already you're in the right spot.
He had a fabulous beard as well, you know. I mean, that goes a long way.
So Lunchbox served us, and then Brandon bought the round?
Brandon bought the round.
After treating us like VIPs in his bar, he takes us to another bar and buys us a round.
Yes. So it is imperative that we tell people that you need to go back to Babes because they will treat you like you are a fucking king when you are schmucks like us.
That is what's up. PBRs are the cocktails of choice right now.
Yes,
you know, we go high class.
This is another two-for-one spot. And I was a little confused when Dave – oh, no, that was Lunchbox that was actually telling me, like, oh, do you want it split? Do you want two-for-one? And I'm like, what fucking language is this? But what it was when I ordered the shots of Jameson's, he wanted to do double Jameson's. But if you split it, so we ended up getting two shots of Jameson.
Oh, I'm so glad you did not do double Jameson's, by the way.
Exactly. That's what I said. I was like, we're not quite ready for that
yet. We did have
a
shot of Jameson. I will say I'm glad it was not a double shot of Jameson. So, yes, the adult beverages are flowing, as you would expect, here in New Orleans. We picked up a straggler along the way. Longtime friend, Richard Goodman, coming in from Tachi Palace. He's got big news at Tachi Palace. He won't let me talk about it, but I'm just going to say.
Oh, you mean that one
good
thing?
Things happening out at Tachi Palace, as you would expect, because Tachi Palace is a great organization. And obviously, Richard's here to talk to be around Joe Soto, I should say. Not serve in his corner, right? Just kind of be supportive and hang out.
Yeah, I'm from the hometown. We actually live around the corner from the show.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So I know Joe since he's been in high spot, following his career, wrestling, everything.
Very cool, very cool. So he's sitting down having a couple cocktails with us.
Tatsy Palace, that's kind of like
a couple of frosty beverages,
right?
Tatsy Palace is what's up, man. I miss going out there. I had some good times out there. I mean, if you ever get a chance to go see a show at Tatsy Palace, obviously the level of MMA that's produced out there is fantastic. I learned tonight 140 fighters have gone on from Tatsy Palace to the UFC roster. That is incredible in itself. 140 fighters. So just going out there, the level of MMA has been fantastic. Obviously, Tatsy Palace has a long history of mixed martial arts. But the other thing on top of it is the hotel's fantastic. I mean, you hear Lemoore, California, you're like, ah, come on, dude, what am I going to do out there? The hotel is fantastic. I used to look forward to going out there just because the freaking beds were so comfortable, man. I got, like, the best night's sleep ever in the rooms in Tatsy Palace. The casino's nice, but the rooms are super, super nice, overlooking the pool and all that air. I mean, listen, I get it. You just, God, what could they have going on out there? No, I'm telling you, it's worth it, man. It's worth it. It's a fantastic property, a lot of fun, and big news. That's all I'm going to say. I'm just going to say, you heard it here first. Big news. I won't even come back and tell you what it is, but when the big news happens, you'll know what it is.
Yeah.
You'll know what it is. That's what's up. That's what's up. I think
MMA Roadshow,
this
breaking
is
news.
Big enough news. We'll have some space on MMA Junkie, so it's all coming, man. All right, so, again, we're here in New Orleans. We've ducked off Bourbon Street a little bit, get a little more quieter retreat.
Yep,
we
yep.
weren't going to beat the last spot we were at. It was
That's
not going to be – there was no
That's
way
tough.
To get better than that. So we said, you know, let's take this in a whole
Scenery
different direction.
It was pretty nice. It was a little distracting. So, you know, I'm glad that we kind of shifted away a little bit.
It definitely was. So – It's been a long day. The really kind of a condensed fight week schedule here in New Orleans for UFC yeah. Fight Night 68. The reason we're here, Tim Boach, Dan Henderson. Basically, everything was loaded into today. So we had a long day this morning. We had open workouts this morning. We had Ultimate Media Day this afternoon. Open workouts were in Jefferson, Louisiana, which is basically a suburb, essentially about 15, 20 minutes outside of town by cab, depending on which way your cab driver decides to go. Yeah. Because the way he went was not the way that my phone on Google Maps suggested that we should. His was much longer. And so I'm just going to say if the accountants at USA Today are listening, I apologize. It was not my fault. I tried. He just took us in a different direction. But once we got there, UFC gym open to the public. Looked like a brand new gym. I think they just opened it. Very sharp as it is. The UFC gyms look good, man. A lot of heavy bags.
Yeah.
Obviously an octagon set up in there. Real cool setup. And then the open workouts got underway. Decent amount of public. I mean, not huge. It wasn't, you know, massive. Obviously, this isn't the biggest show of the year, and it's not, it wasn't like right in the middle of Jackson Square or something where just foot traffic was going to show up. So, I mean, the people that showed up were showing up there for a reason.
Yeah, they were diehard.
They were there because they were the diehard fans. But it was supportive. It was fun. Good afternoon overall. But I tell you what brought down the house for me, two big things I take away were Dustin Poirier.
Yes.
I thought he did a fantastic job. I mean, just the excitement, the energy level he had, and obviously the Black Beast as well, Derek Lewis. I thought he held shop as well. So start with Dustin Poirier. I was filming the interviews, the scrum sessions, as it was. You were actually doing the cage work, you know, filming highlights
sure.
and everything. But I thought Dustin Poirier came in and really put on a show. What were your thoughts?
One of the first things I noticed was his energy level was through the roof. I mean, a lot of guys come to these things, they know it's a media obligation. They come out there, like, they walk through the paces, which, not to say that that's what it was for them, but the first couple guys that came in, you know, they came in, they did their things, you know, but, and they knew it was about doing whatever. And then you go, you shadow box a little bit. You maybe hit some mitts. Then you answer some media questions, done. But when they came in, you could tell they had a little bit of the hometown pride. They had the energy. Dustin came in. Next thing I know, he's fucking yelling something. You know, he was pumping himself up, pumping the crowd up. You know, it was amazing to see. You could tell he was fully invested in this fight, and he was ready to go. And he came out hitting, striking. He looked good. He looked like the Dustin like that when everybody was saying, like, this is the guy that's charging up the ranks before maybe, you know, he ran into, like, a Conor McGregor train or whatever. I mean, he looked awesome. He looked incredible, and it was good to see him because, I mean, he got me hyped up.
Yeah.
I don't get hyped up when I watch these things, but when you see a fighter that gets so that excited and he's sitting here, when you start thinking, like, fuck, I don't want to be opposite of that.
Right.
You know that something's doing well. But, yeah, Dustin was incredible. And then, you know, segueing into Derek. Derek looked like a beast, you know, like, and it was to the point where, you know, a lot of times fight cards come and go and you kind of forget who's fighting who. But the general consensus as he started going to people are like, wait, who's fighting him? oh, shit. he's got a tough night coming, you know, and everybody's like, damn. Yeah. Sean's got a fight coming, you know, so.
Yeah. Dustin, obviously the big key for him is he's not at 145 anymore. He's at 155, yeah. And he said it, like, listen, I never necessarily decided I want to be a featherweight. You know, he got an offer for a big fight at featherweight in the UFC. He was a lightweight. I think sometimes people forget that. He was a lightweight, went down to 145 pounds, decided, I kind of like myself at this, had a good performance, stayed there, but he's gotten older. He came in as a young kid, you know, to the WEC first and then the UFC. He's gotten older. His body has grown a little bit. And there are horror stories that the people around you will tell him of, like, his daily intake on fight week was like 4 almonds and a piece of lettuce. You know, like, there's just no way you can be at your best in that. There's not. And to see the way he felt was obvious. I mean, to see you could really see the difference in his energy level. You said high energy, just having a good time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you talked about the Conor thing as well. And I mentioned it briefly, and I asked him about it. You know, what did you learn from that? What did you take from that? Because, you know, and I don't think – we'll see. I mean, we got a big title fight coming up. Obviously, 189 is going to be huge. I don't think Jose Aldo will necessarily buy into the hype and all that. But, you know, everybody that's fought Conor up to this point that said, I didn't let the moment get caught up to me. He didn't get in my head. Bullshit. He was in every one of your heads. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And I think even Poirier, he might not want to necessarily admit it. But, I mean, he basically admits it without saying it. Like, I let the moment get to me. I let the opportunity get to me. I let everything just get caught up. And so the combination of two things, you know, the lessons he learned there about just having fun and don't overthink things, man, just going through your thing, and then also not having to cut all this weight, he just looked incredible. And I'm excited to see his performance. Not to take anything away from his opponent. Yancy Medeiros is a fantastic fighter.
Incredible.
And I think this is going to be a fantastic fight, man. I love this matchup. I mean, on paper, fight of the night type material on paper. I love it. But Dustin looks fantastic. Going so far as to giving us local recommendations for food. He said Johnny Po' Boys is what he said we got to try out. Local sandwich shop. I've seen it before. I've never had it. But, I mean, if Dustin says it's good.
Say, hey, I have had the shrimp po' boy at Acme's with the Acme Oyster House.
That's
was
right.
Pretty delicious, you know. It's another place that if people come in that you brought that up. Let me just tell you, when we first got here, we were looking for food. And John was on a mission. He was like, we're going to get to Jackson Square, and then we're going to go get something to eat. One, I was very, very starving. But he made sure that our first bit of food was at a good place, and it was this Acme place. Had a shrimp po' boy as well as some grilled oysters and some other stuff, and it was
top-notch.
It's
awesome. I mean, Acme's kind of a little bit of a touristy place or whatever. You know, I mean, people line up outside of it, but I still love it, man. It's just you know, the guy we were talking to says he shucks 1,500 oysters a day.
Can
I mean,
you believe
that's
that?
That's incredible, man. Just everybody,
Andre, right?
Everybody that's on staff, 1,500 a day. So amazing. We had a great time. So, listen. What I want to do is now, while we partake of this fantastic Pabst Blue Ribbon, obviously just a high quality beverage like we like
red,
to
white,
do.
Red, white, and blue. It's America, right?
It is America. I want to play that audio now for Dustin Poirier. In case you guys didn't get a chance to see the interview, the video scrum that we put up, let people listen to it here because I think you're gonna hear. Just the joy and the happiness in his voice, man, and hear how much energy he has and really just get a sense of what's here. And I'm telling you, I think on paper this is going to be fight of the night. So we're going to get another round of these two-for-ones. So we're going to load up
on
this. Things
we're
progressing well here.
Here.
Things are progressing well here in New Orleans. So sit back, relax, listen to a little bit of Dustin Poirier, and we'll be right back. Well, Dustin, I mean, safe to say this is emotional for you. You see it there. Just talk about the feelings that you're feeling right now.
Man, it's been a long time since I fought in Louisiana, and I'm just happy to be back, you know, around Louisiana people, and the cage is getting set up in my home state, man. It's exciting for me. It's an exciting time.
Is there any danger at all? Sometimes, you know, you get too emotional and don't focus or take risks, or, you know what I mean? Is there any danger of that at all?
Nah, man, I'm a risk taker. I'm excited to put on a show. You know, it's the opposite of that for me. I'm fueled by these people and just excited, like I said, just to go in there and perform. And a lot of people who haven't seen me fight in a long time get a chance to do so now. And, man, I'm happy to be here.
Talk about the two-month turnaround. Obviously, you know, quick time to get back in the cage. Positive, negative, anything? Does it affect anything?
You know, it was easy because I went back home, took a week to relax, and jump right back in camp. I didn't have to lose a bunch of weight to get in camp, like, you know, training shape or anything like that. I stayed in pretty peak shape. Actually got to pull back a little bit, let my body, you know, readjust, and then hit the gas again towards the end of camp. it was perfect, man. Fighting at 55, I can fight more often and have a fun time making weight.
Well, so help us understand, because a lot of people think your last fight was one of your best performances ever. Probably not a coincidence that you went back to 155. So,
I left 155 division in the WC with a knockout win. I didn't leave here with my tail between my legs, you know. I just had an opportunity to go to 45 in the UFC to fight a top guy in Josh Grisby back in the day, and I did it. And I just decided to stay there. But, you know, I was 21 years old, 26 now, and I feel like I'm growing and maturing, and it's always been a rough cut, and over the years it's got rougher and rougher. And, you know, I want to love what I do. That's why I started fighting. I don't want to wake up in the morning and count almonds out and hate what I'm doing. I want to eat breakfast and go train. So that's what I'm doing now.
Permanent move then? You think 155 is where you're at to stay?
It would take something crazy to make me go back down to 45. I'm not going back, you know. I'm 55.
Nice. Talk about how important that win was just to get your mind right. I feel like, man, that was such an emotional fight before with Connor and all the build-up
right.
around
you
it.
Know,
was it important to put that behind?
For sure, you know, but it was also important to happen. And it was a learning process in my career and my development as a fighter and as a person. I feel like I learned a lot from the Connor fight. Now I'm going into fights, having fun again. You know, that Connor fight, I wasn't having fun. I was pissed off. I wanted to hurt the guy. I was tired and drained from the weight cuts. And, you know, I was just in a bad place. I physically felt like I was ready to fight, but it just took a lot to go into it. You know, he beat me fair and square. I'm not blaming it on the weight cut or anything like that, but it just needed to happen. And now it's a new chapter.
So let's talk about this fight, the matchup. What do you think about Yancey?
You know, he's a fighter that I enjoy watching, so it's a fight that I want to be part of. He's exciting. I never see him in boring fights. He tries to finish. And so do I. So I think the fans are in store for a really good fight this time.
You feel like this is just kind of a new chapter in your career? Like you're just kind of starting fresh now that you're back at lightweight?
Right. I feel like I am starting fresh. I feel so much better, man. Just the week of the fight and training camp leading up to it. Mentally, I just feel just happy again, you know, and that's important to anything you do. But I'm excited to go out there and fight Yancey, man. He brings it, and I hope he does Saturday.
Is there anything special you've gotten to do as far as the homecoming fight week?
No, I got a couple of my buddies, Mike Brown and my boxing coach, Daya, and my wrestling coach, Canvas Barzini, get them a little bit of crawfish and alligator and stuff like that. But it's just good to be in the atmosphere of New Orleans, and I'm enjoying that.
You said you hadn't fought in Louisiana in a long time. What are your memories of your last fight in your home state?
You know, my last fight, I fought a tough guy who was an up-and-comer with a lot of fights. From Texas, and it was a big fight in my hometown of Lafayette. And after that fight, I went to Canada, and eventually got signed by the WC. So, but that was 2010, I want to say. And I haven't fought in New Orleans maybe since 2008. Rich Clemente actually did a show in the Superdome, and I fought, and that was the last time I fought in New Orleans.
In the Superdome?
Superdome. Yeah.
It's almost like a big milestone point in your career, because it kind of propelled you right after that.
Yeah, you know, we knew that fight, I just signed up to a management company the first time in my career, and we knew if I won that fight, I was going to go to Canada and fight a guy that Sean Shelby was looking at, and it was a big opportunity to beat him and make an impression. And, yeah, so that got the ball rolling.
So there he is, the man, Dustin Poirier. Obviously, it means a lot to him to be fighting here in Louisiana, to be fighting in New Orleans. Incredible. I didn't realize he had fought in the Superdome before. That's incredible. I mean, just amazing. I mean, there is a long history. The fight scene here, I think it's been overlooked for a long time, but, you know, there's a lot of history here on the scene, and certainly Dustin Poirier is one of the best that have come out of the region for sure. I'm excited for the fight. Like I said, fight of the night type material, and as you said from the very beginning, you can just hear in his voice how much better he feels being at 155 and how excited he is. Just the scene today at the open workouts. I mean,
and seeing the fans afterwards, meet and
greet,
that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, he took time to sign for everybody that was in there, and he was just – you know, during the middle of his workout, he just stops. He's like, Louisiana, where you at? Where you at? He's like, I'm ready now. We don't have to wait till Saturday. I'm ready now. Yeah. You know, I mean, you could just see
how can you not get pumped up for that?
For sure.
I get so excited. I mean, we're fucking just a camera guy. You're a guy that's in, you know, front doing whatever. And it's like, those guys get me jacked up. When you see a guy that excited to do something like that, it's like, fuck, yeah, let's have the fight today. Like,
Very cool. Let's do it.
Right.
It's going to be a fun one. So the other highlight for me, and again, the open workouts also included Tim Boach and Sean Jordan. I don't want to take away from them. Tim Boach, one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet.
Yes, yes.
Hardworking guy, fun guy to watch, one of the most, you know, durable guys. That's the first thing everybody says. Like, he's durable, man. He's durable. He's got knockout power. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm actually picking him over Dan Henderson. I've picked against Dan Henderson about 10 times in a row and lost, like, a lot of them. Now, he's he's had some troubles as of late, but when he was on that run, he made me look pretty stupid quite a few times. And Sean Jordan, I've just another guy that's super nice. I mean, one of the nicest people you'll ever meet, so friendly. You know, it's funny because, I mean, man, the UFC heavyweight division is full of beasts. And, I mean, Sean's a big guy, but he's not, like, that big.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like 5'10". He's thick. You know, he's got that.
He only seems smaller because he's so friendly. You're just like, oh, he's a fucking jolly dude. But then, like, he's not a small man. But you're like, oh, he's just so nice. You just want to blah, blah. He's like, I know he could knock me out, but still, he's so nice. He wouldn't do that, you know.
But the man to me that stole the show.
He did steal the show,
was Derek Lewis. First of all, Derek Lewis came out. I mean, Derek is, I think prospect is the right tag. He's not a contender just yet. Cardio, still a question mark around him. He does seem to tire. You know, how well-rounded is his game? Okay. All the question marks are fair, but what he does bring to the table is just insane power, ridiculous. And he got in there today and, first of all, hit mitts for a little bit and then brought a heavy bag into the cage, which, I mean, it's something we see in training, but it's never something I've seen in an open workout. They brought the heavy bag into the cage. He jumped on top of it, basically went from side control to mount, and was just wailing on this heavy bag. Kenny, you were standing cage side. Impressions of the power that Derek Lewis possesses.
I mean, one, you said you took it lightly when you said he hit mitts. I would say he destroyed mitts. I'd say the guy that was in there holding the pads was definitely feeling, because, one, a lot of the guys come in there, you know, they wrap their hands. He does not. He pretty much put gloves on and just went to town, you know. So there was no buildup. There was no whatever. And there was no, like, pitter-patter of soft gloves saying, all right, are you ready? All right, maybe in get a little more intense. Literally, straight from the get-go, was destroying the pads. And let alone when he got on this fucking bag that they laid on the ground, I mean, it was intense. He was shifting side to side. You could tell he was, like, putting his weight on and making it heavy. And he was like, and you're watching, like, oh, I wonder what he's focusing on. And then when you see him drop elbows and drop pound, you're like, oh, I see what he's focusing on.
Yeah.
He's focusing on literally destroying somebody. Yeah. If he gets him on the ground, holy shit, because it was devastating. I was literally 4 feet away shooting it. And he wasn't dilly-dallying. I mean, he was sweating. He was working. He probably got the hardest sweat on out of everybody. And it wasn't just for the fact that he's a big man. He probably put 110% effort. Like, it was a legit workout, and I was just like, holy fuck. And I'm not the only person. That's why you could hear people mumbling off to the side, like, wait, who's he fighting? Holy shit.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Beast. The Black Beast is right. But then it came time for the scrum. Interviews. The guy, first of all, it's really incredible to see kind of how humble he is, and just to see how I mean, basically talks about his kids nonstop. He's like, listen, man, I do this for my kids. I'm not in this for fame. I'm not in this for title. You know, he did say, of course, if I move up, that means more money, you know. But the bottom line is I'm here to do this to support my kids, and that's it. And really cool. I mean, how can you hate a guy for saying that? As a father myself, you know, for a guy that just says, man, I'm just doing this to take care of my children. And again, we did put the scrum up on MMA Junkies.
Which is a great episode. Like, one of the best things I heard that out of that quote was, like, I didn't have the greatest life or childhood myself, and I made mistakes. He's like, I want to provide something so my kids don't have to go through it. And it's powerful. It was like it was a very, very powerful interview. If you haven't checked it out, go to MMAJunkie.com, check the whole scrum. And I mean, well, you're gonna actually get to hear it here.
Yeah,
I don't want to spoil it.
We're gonna play. You know? Yeah, we're gonna play. Well, we're gonna play tipping our hand already, man. You're the worst producer.
I am the worst ever because I get excited.
Yeah, right?
I'm getting excited about it. It's a great.
But
interview.
It is cool, man. And you can hear the sincerity in his voice. It's not like he's just saying it just to hear. I mean, it's the sincerity. And it was weird because, you know, he said, like, I had my time and I ruined my time.
Yeah.
And I don't want that to happen to my kids. It's weird because here's the guy that's kind of in the prime of his athletic career and heavyweight division, man. You pick up two or three wins, all of a sudden you're talking title shot. You know, do I pick him to beat Cain Velasquez? No, I don't. But I don't pick many people to beat Cain Velasquez. But do I pick him to be in some exciting fight? I mean, anybody else, I mean, you know, I put him up against. I mean, dude, throw him and Mark Hunt in there together. I mean, there's so many fun matchups. Oh, just throwing bombs. I mean, the power that he brings you don't have to be an MMA fan. You do not have to understand the nuances of the guard or, you know, who's winning the clinch work battle to be a Derek Lewis fan. You just go, that dude is big and scary.
He hits hard.
He does. But, I mean, for him to say, like, that's it. And for him to say, I had my chance and I ruined it and I don't want that to happen to my kids. Like, I mean, he's still in his chance. You know what I mean? Yeah. This is still his chance. But he basically just says, listen, man, all the things that I've done, everything that I've been through, I'm not proud of it, and now I've just found a way to pay the bills and take care of my kids, and that's awesome. So that in itself was cool. But then this is where the guy just totally started opening up his personality. So when we come to these events, we do preview interviews and that sort of thing. But by this time, listen, man, there's 24 hours, 48 hours. There's just not enough time to write articles and do all these things. So it's like there's so much going on. I mean, we did 10 interviews a day. To try to come back and write 10 you know, interviews and 10 articles, it's not possible. So we've taken to, you know, really asking about hot topics and hey, what's going on? Let's get everybody's opinion. While we're here and we've got 10 of you, let's get 10 opinions on this hot topic and let's share it with the world and maybe fans can go, okay, good point of view. I like that. So one of the topics, of course, was the new UFC drug policy, which was rolled out earlier this week. You know, what do you think about it? What do you think about, you know, USADA coming in and being on board and this random drug testing and all that? And Derek Lewis, without hesitation, just deadpans. I've been using HGH my whole camp, and nobody say anything about it, so I'm cool with it. You know, and it was just like, I mean, we're just kind of looking at each other like, he didn't mean HGH, right? Like, he totally meant something else. And then right there, he's like, nah, I'm just bullshitting. I'm bullshitting. And it was just so funny, man. I mean, just the huge, sincere laugh that he had. I'm like, look at this joker, man. He's hilarious. So that was fantastic. It just really, you know, kind of let you see a little bit. Because Derek is a huge, imposing figure, man. I mean, yeah. he is a scary dude.
His fists are literally big as your head.
Absolutely, man. And ginormous. Then to see that he's got this incredible sense of humor as well is funny. And then to top it all off, you know, the scrum's over, and we're like, thanks, Derek, appreciate it very much. And he just looks at me, he's like, I'm surprised you don't have your blue shirt on right now. And I'm like, all right, Derek's got jokes, man. He's good. So Derek Lewis, to me, stole the show. We're going to play the audio, but Kenny, anything else, any last impressions?
Well, I was going to say, and this, I thought it was you that maybe told me the story, but it was actually Mike Roach, one of the other UFC photogs, that said when Derek came in for his photos, you know, most of the guys, they take pictures with the gloves. And he said, hey, do you have any 3XL gloves? He didn't have 3XL gloves. He had 2XL gloves. And this is where I heard about this. And he's like, well, if you don't have your hands wrapped, can you wear the 2XL gloves? And he's like, no, I don't wrap my hands. 3XL without wraps. And this stems from.
He doesn't wrap them in a fight?
Maybe they have to do it.
You don't have to. You're not required
and
to.
And we maybe have to check.
There's a maximum tape you can use. It's
like
not a
maybe
minimum.
They put. And I don't know. I don't know if this is breaking news or whatever, but from what Mike told me, and maybe this is all BS, and maybe I'm – he served some jail time?
He did serve some jail time.
They don't wrap hands in jail. He has like 10 or 12 fights or whatever.
They don't wrap hands in jail. You know? Shocking.
Yeah. But supposedly that's where it stemmed from, is that he got used to fighting that way. And like – and with your – and when you have fists – as big as a fucking Fiesta or Festiva,
yeah.
Maybe you don't have to do it. But supposedly, that's the story. But
all right. Now we know something we got to look out for.
Let's look to see if he wraps. But that was the deal. His hands are so big that they weren't quite sure if they'd be able to fit in the gloves, you know, ticking the things. But, you know, there it was. He was like, oh, hey, maybe if we don't wrap your hands. He's like, nah, bro, I don't wrap my hands. I'm just a big-ass 3XL motherfucking hands. I didn't know they had 3XL gloves.
That's amazing. Yeah. Shane Carwin and Brock Lesnar, I think, have always been the biggest of all time, but he's certainly right there with them. So, all right, well, Derek Lewis stole the show. So without further ado, we will let you hear from Derek Lewis now. While you do that, we are going to maybe have another beverage or two. Thank you. That sounds fantastic, especially when somebody else is buying. I'm always down for it. And after that, we'll find ourselves a new location.
We have one last spot. I'm sure we can find something.
We'll wrap this thing up, man. We'll wrap up our little tour of the French Quarter and New Orleans. And it's been fun so far, so I don't see why it wouldn't be any important. So sit back, relax, and listen to the Black Beast himself, Derek Lewis.
Derek, let's talk about the experience of getting the opportunity to fight here in New Orleans.
Oh, it's surreal feeling. It's like a dream come true. You know, never really thought that I'd be here to fight, you know. And just like a true blessing. A rough childhood growing up here in New Orleans. And to be on the highest stage of them all, it's like a true blessing.
That's awesome. I don't think you need much motivation to come in and bring it. You usually do that every time. But does it feel different? Does it feel like I got to do something extra special this time out?
You know, it's all on my kids. You know, they're depending on me. And I want them to have a better life than I had growing up, you know. And so it's really all about my kids. It's not about me anymore. You know, I had my chance. I screwed it. And so all of this is for my kids.
It seems like you are, accomplishing good things for yourself, getting attention. I think people are becoming fans of your game and your style. I mean, do you feel like, you say your time's gone, but I mean, it feels like there's still a lot that could be accomplished.
You know, I'm not in it for the fame or anything like that. I'm in it just to provide for my kids, my family, make sure they have a better life than I have.
You wanted this rematch. I know you wanted any rematches, but this one was the one that came up. Why did you want rematches? Why is this fight you want?
You know, I feel like I really won that fight, and it was my second MMA fight, like, in my career, and so I feel like I got really screwed in that fight, and I let the fight go to the judges, knowing that we was in Baton Rouge, where I believe he was from, and so that was really pulling for him to win, and I know he's saying that I was doing a bunch of cheap shots and stuff like that, and at the end of the first round, I really didn't hear the bell, and so whenever he got up off me, I hit him like twice, I didn't know. And so at the end of the fight, I had him pinned down, doing my ground and pound. The bell didn't ring at all. Like the fourth hit, and I know he was already out. Then the fourth or fifth hit, then the bell rung, and his coach coming jumping across the cage, and his whole team trying to get at me. And the referee never pulled me off him, so I thought I had won the fight. And so it wasn't the case.
So for you, he says it's not like bad blood or anything, but for you, it seems like you want a little bit of revenge here and send a message.
Not really. It's not bad blood for me either. Sean a good guy. Got the chance to get to know him whenever I went over there at the American Top Team training with him a little bit. But he's a good guy. You know, I don't got nothing against him. But my kids are hungry, so I got to get it.
Nice. You know, you talk about just wanting to provide for your kids, but do you think at all about being a contender? Because I think people have this, like, prospect tag on you right now. Do you think, you know, rankings and move up? Because, I mean, you know, higher rankings, bigger fights does mean more money.
Yeah, so I want to be a, like, top 15, top 10 guy, and hopefully this fight right here will put me through that door.
Previously, you had said that you were using fighting as a means to kind of pay off your house, and you had a short timeline for getting out of the sport, maybe two or three more fights. Is that still something that's part of your thought process?
You know, the bank said that, you know, where my credit looking, so probably gonna have to fight a little longer. So, but yeah, it's all about my kids. But if I could give a couple more fights and make pretty decent money, then yeah. I think that's what I'm going to do, so I don't know. We'll see.
How old are your kids?
2 and 3.
Do you have any hopes on maybe fighting for a title sometime down the road? Just the way the heavyweight division looks, it seems like it's ripe for the taking. A lot of the same guys kind of in that top 10.
Yeah, I believe if I could come in and talk trash like Conor McGregor do, I believe I'd get a title shot next fight. We'll see.
Can you do that? Is that in your personality to do that?
No, I'm not that type of guy. I can't talk trash to anybody. You know, I take all of this fighting personal. So I really, whatever I say, I mean it. I'm not gonna be like, oh, shake hands at the end of the fight. No, I'm still gonna feel like that towards
you. Get a couple questions outside of your fight. The main event, Timbo, Stan Henderson. Who you got?
I like to go with the underdog. I'm gonna go with Timbo. I believe the underdog.
Next week, there's a title fight in your division. Cain Velasquez, Fabricio Verdum. Who wins that fight?
I just want to see a good fight, you know. I don't want no boring fight, nothing like that. No GSP type of fight. You know, I want to see entertaining fight, you know.
All right. Big news this week, the drug plan has been talked about for a while. It's in place now. USADA is going to be overseeing it. Random testing year-round. What are your thoughts on it? I know you've been preparing on a fight, maybe didn't get to see all of it, but just knowing that there's a stiffer drug plan in place, what's your thoughts on that?
You know, I've been using HGH, you know, this whole training camp. You know, they ain't say nothing about me. Nah, I'm bullshitting. hopefully, it don't matter to me. I don't do none of that stuff. I never did. Scared, I already got a bad heart. Hopefully, they do something good when they get it out the sport. You know, it makes it look bad. You know, guys come trying to cheat. Like Sean Jordan, he got busted for steroids and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that he's coming into the fight knowing that he don't got the extra boost. And, you know, I'm sure he's feeling that nervous right now.
Last question I got for you. The Reebok deal officially kicks off next month. People are saying they don't need managers anymore. There's not all the sponsors, and some people are saying it is, they don't. What's your take? Do you think you still need a manager now that the Reebok deal's in place and it's all automatic?
Yeah, I believe we don't need a manager, you know. Dana White can call me and ask me to fight anybody. I'm not going to turn it down. I'm not going to really negotiate nothing. I'm going to just say, yeah, no matter who it is. So I feel like you don't need a manager.
I was going to ask, seeing how both you and Sean have KOs, TKOs in your UFC career, how do you think your striking matches up with Sean?
I believe my striking is a little better. Sean just really learning how to really strike. I've been striking all my career, and he's just now just trying to put that into his MMA game right now.
Well, cold coffee, let's be honest. It's the end of the night, and that's all you can really say about this right now. We have made it to the end of Bourbon Street. First of all, I should say that was Derek Lewis. I hope everybody enjoyed Derek Lewis. I do think he stole the show this week. I think he was a huge, agreed, huge star. But we must talk. We are at the end of Bourbon Street. We are at John Lafitte's Blacksmith Shop, a very historic place. Claimed as the oldest bar in America. You always have to worry when people say this is the oldest, the best, the greatest, the thing, but there is a lot of history in this town.
True.
The only thing that Cold Coffee seems to be concerned about is that history smells.
It smells legit, and it smells like original. It smells, yeah.
It kind of makes you wish you were back at Babe's.
It kind of makes you wish that you had, like, allergies and you couldn't really smell the street. But, no, I take that back. No, it's wonderful. It's a wonderful city. It's a wonderful whatever. But, yeah.
Yeah.
It's pungent right now.
It is. We're doing some people walking – or people walking. We're doing some people watching of people walking.
That's
promise
true.
You.
We are people watching.
We are people watching of people walking.
talking about the best slam dunk ever.
See?
The which?
I don't know. What did she say?
The best
–
MJ?
Who had the best slam dunk ever?
Best slam dunk ever? MJ.
We were podcasting about the best non-slam dunk, but now we're going to talk about the best slam dunk ever. MJ, forever.
As you can see, the MMA Roadshow, very popular among the people of New Orleans. I mean, in fairness, we are two dudes sitting outside right now. I should say we are sitting outside right now. We have a cold beer in hand, a little frosty beverage, of course. We are sitting outside in a couple of chairs on the on the ground level, just chilling, just hanging out.
It's real. Most people would start over, but no, fuck that.
We're not starting over. This is what we do.
No,
this is what we do.
Embrace the grind.
This is the easiest grind of all time.
You know,
when
people talk about, you know, you got to sacrifice for your art. We're sacrificing for the art. You know what I'm saying? You know, like, this is our fight camp right now. Is this the fight?
I'm not even sure anymore. I don't even know what day it is, to be honest with you. There's a full moon outside, and the beautiful structures of New Orleans. It might not be beautiful to you, but this is a place that's special to me. I grew up here.
Oh, it's beautiful.
You know, I didn't even mention, this is
But you're a Texas boy. You can't claim both.
I'm a Texas boy, but I used to come down to New Orleans all the time, 3 or 4 times a year. Has always been one of my favorite spots. The first UFC I ever went to in my life. It's gotten greater over time. The first UFC I ever went to was UFC 16. That was Frank Shamrock versus Igor Zinoviev. That was at the Pontchartrain Event Center out in Pontchartrain, Louisiana. We've talked about the John McCarthy story, about how I got the tickets from John McCarthy. And but yeah, I mean, that's so Louisiana has meant something to me since I was a teenager. So I'm happy to be here, even if it does smell a little bit.
You know, but hey, you got to embrace it. And it's one of those things, I'll be honest, after you sit for a while, it kind of mellows out a little bit. And nobody else seems to be minding. So I'm starting to think it's just me. Maybe they don't notice it. Maybe I just have – maybe it's just me.
Maybe it's just you. All right, well, we started in a fantastic place, but this is what happens when you drink absinthe to start your night.
That's what it
is. And then go to a place of adult entertainment. And then go to a dive bar.
Absinthe
and then go
straight to titties is probably not the best combination.
It's either going to be the best show or the worst show we've ever done. I would like people to weigh in. Hit me up on Twitter at MMA Junkie John. Hit up.
Yeah, Ken S. Hathaway or The Cold Coffee.
That's two E's.
Two E's, like The Ohio. Well,
hit us up and let us know. Is it the best show we've ever done? Is it the worst show we've ever done?
Hands down the drunkest show.
There's no way it falls in between anywhere.
No, that's for sure.
All right. So there's that. Also, on Instagram, The MMA Roadshow. Yes. Make sure you're following that because we take pictures of where we're at. So that way you can see. And not that we're not fantastic at eloquently describing our atmospheres.
That's
but
true.
If you can see a visual thing, it might help you a little bit. And lastly, of course, TheMMAroadshow.com. You can download directly there. If you're on iTunes, please subscribe on iTunes. That helps us out a lot. Review us on iTunes. That helps us out a lot. We're trying to blow this thing up. And do better things with it. So if you can help us out, that would be fantastic. So let's wrap up our day in New Orleans, our time in New Orleans. Obviously, fight weekend is quickly approaching. The last thing we did today, good Lord, this has been a long day.
It has been a long day. You know, and most people, maybe that's why we take it personal. When somebody's like, oh, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you have this shit where I'm learning. I'm learning from Mr. Morgan.
Don't read the comments.
You know, when you work on all fucking day and you have a shot and they're like, oh, this is where you can stand. And you stand there and you shoot. And somebody's like, well, why didn't you get the front? Why didn't you shoot this? It's like, motherfucker, are you serious? So, yes, there's a lot of shit that comes into whatever. And today's been a long day. So, yeah. So today, after, you know, getting there today and – let alone the whole fact of John travels all around the world and you travel wherever, adjusting the time zone differences, and you wake up at a couple hours like myself, which, you know, woke up super early, and at some point you just got to give up and say, fuck it, it's 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm getting up, where my rest of my mind is saying, like, what the fuck are you getting up for? So besides that, you know, you get up and you go and you shoot, and then we have media day after the fact where since – normally it's spread out two different days. They put it all in one day. So after we did the open workouts where instead of just go back and edit and be done, they're like, oh, hey, by the way, we're bringing a whole slew of guys that hasn't been there.
Well, listen, I mean, I appreciate the access. I'm glad the UFC does that for us because, again, we do the highlight videos. Or not the highlight videos. We call them mashups where we talk about, again, you know, what do you think about the drug policy? What do you think about managers in MMA? You know, all these things. I like it, but it does make it for a long day. And I guess if we're being honest, not a lot of media here this week. Dave Mandel and Tristan is here from Sure Dog. So respect to them because that was really the only, like, strong endemic, you know, MMA media that was here. So much respect to them. We'll say there were a couple of local spots, which was cool. You know, the
local journalists. I'm not sure what the paper is that they wrote.
Yeah, the Times Picayune is one.
I like to call them the Times Picanha.
Times Picanha. Yeah, that's a great piece of Brazilian churrascaria. You know, the thing is, when you have local media, I always love to see local media because to me that means like the community is buying into it.
Yeah.
They want to see what's going on and they're covering it. But from our point of view, I mean, they usually don't know what they're covering. And, again, I'm not hating them. This is what I always say. It's like if you told me to be like, hey, John, man, I know what you normally make per day. I'm going to pay you 10 times what you make, but I need you to go cover a yachting race. Like,
right.
What the hell am I'm not going to know anything that I'm doing. You know what I mean? Like, I appreciate the money, but I'm not going to know what I'm covering.
It's true.
And so that's kind of what I relate to with the local MMA media or the local media when they come out to cover MMA. I appreciate it, but it's also difficult because I know they're in a difficult spot because they don't really know what they're covering, to be honest
true.
With you.
It's true. And what was interesting enough is that they came out, and, of course, if anybody's ever watched a post-fight press conference where the first question somehow always becomes Mr. John Morgan. Same thing with some of these local shows where the local media maybe is not used to covering some of the things. Mr. Morgan take over. He takes over. He starts asking his questions, and most guys, honestly, you know, if there's a follow-up question after, you're a little surprised. But today, like you said, Sherdog brought it. Sherdog brought some other questions
they
outside
did.
Of that. That was it. But, yeah, it was a little surprising, being New Orleans being what it is. I was a little bit surprised that there wasn't more media being out there, you know, whether it's being from, you know, the local television station or something somewhat more regional.
Right.
You know, begs the question, why? Why not? I mean, you know the UFC's putting their money in to do whatever. I mean, you know, but who knows? That's another question for another day,
I guess the thing we can report and know for sure that is if you ever want to feel like you're in a zoo or that you're in a fishbowl, what you should do is you should don a pair of broadcast headsets and you should sit outside a place and start talking to each other.
Oh, you must be referencing the gentleman that just stood 3 inches away from us, didn't say anything but stared at us.
I just want to give much respect to myself.
We should that's where folks, as you keep listening to this, eventually hopefully there will be a video aspect to this and you will see the wonders of those who stare at us as we do this sort of thing. But no, this has been an interesting trip, and they've taken in stride, and I think it's probably for the people in New Orleans. They're like, it's just more crazy shit that you see off to the side.
That's it, man. It's not like they're not used to seeing crazy stuff. So, all right. So let's just talk about Media Day real quick. We got to wrap up. We've gone long enough. We've had people follow us all night long, and hopefully they've all enjoyed their ride. But
many beers were harmed.
Oh my goodness, it's just not good. It's just not. I make poor decisions. I just don't make good decisions. A couple things I took away. First of all, and I'll start here, and I'll let you go. The first thing I took away was Yancy Medeiros. First of all, let's credit to our man John Anik. I was listening to his and Kenny Florian's podcast earlier this week. John Anik, a man that always is big on pronunciation of I can't even say pronunciation, so you know it's time to get the fucking thing over with.
You can't say pronunciation, can't say last name.
It's probably time to get things over with. But always thought it was Yancy Medeiros. He turns in the MP3 where he says his own name is Yancy Medeiros. So just be used to it when you hear it on the broadcast on Saturday night. That's why. Okay. But Yancy Medeiros, a guy that struck me as a person that didn't like talking to the media, but just didn't really care about it, didn't see the importance of it. And I thought, today I've seen it grow over time, but obviously, you know, it's probably fueled a little bit by two fantastic performances in a row in the cage, but I thought he was fantastic today. We talked earlier about the fight with Dustin Poirier, how great that's going to be.
Yeah.
But just seemed to be super comfortable. You know, talked a lot about how he wants to be not just an asset to the company, but an investment for the company. Very cool about that. Bottom line is, I just thought that he's a guy that's come a long way and has shown what you can do. I'm sure nobody shows up to the UFC being comfortable in front of the cameras, comfortable selling themselves, comfortable, you know, telling the world about themselves. But I think he's come a long way.
And besides that, being a company man and being comfortable and bringing something of themselves, he also went outside of that and also brought something from his home state. You know, we come into the room to do some editing, and there's these boxes of Hawaiian chocolates. And that was Yancy. That's Yancy. He brings – and I think he's done that before, where he's brought something because he appreciates the work that the UFC staff does. Because if people don't know, UFC staff works long hours. They do crazy shit. Everybody thinks this glorious and glamorous thing. And, yes, in a sense it is. But these people pull long, crazy hours. And when the fighters are able to come and they bring something from their hometown or whatever, it's very appreciated. And that's what Yancy did. There's these boxes of these caramels and chocolates that Yancy brought. Of course, he's cutting weight, but what does he do? He brings these lovely, delicious chocolates that, of course, when me and John were the last people in the office closing it today, we sampled a few.
We kind of stole those, didn't we?
We kind of stole them.
You shouldn't really be saying that.
We probably not, but nobody fessed up. I'm sorry, Mara or whoever, that we stole your delicious candies. But, you know, and even the thing with that, you know, there were some fighters that, some fighters come into things like, hey, can we get this done? Can we be done with it? Certain fighters come in the way that the media day happened today. Certain fighters were stacked upon fighters. So fighters were waiting for other fighters to get done stuff done. And at a particular point when Yance came in, other fighters were there and fighters, can we just get this done? They have like other people there with them. And you try to be a comedy, you're trying to do whatever, you know. So I lean over to Yance, I'm like, Yancey, it's all right, can we do this? Can we just get this guy done and out of here? And of course you can tell he's hurting, his weight cut. You know, and yeah, he was still gracious enough. He was still a company man. He was still doing everything he could do. And he was like, yes, you know, let's do it. Granted, he was like, you know, how long will it take? But he was like, yes.
Because we were trying to get Ben Rothwell first because you guys had just spoken to Ben Rothwell. And we're like, hey, we can cycle him in and out real quick.
Yep. I mean, I didn't feel like I wanted to. Feel like I was throwing.
Oh, dude! Don't even try to describe that. Don't even try to. Don't even try to describe.
Oh my god!
Don't even. Just move on.
But at first, I wasn't gonna like try to throw like I was.
Let's just say this
is
a person that walked in front of us, and there's just no. Just don't even try. All right.
I was like, were those panties or were those shorts?
I'm telling you,
they were like.
I'm telling you, if I had a picture, I wouldn't publish it. If I had a video, I would probably destroy the camera.
Oh, that's harsh. But hey, so back to the other. So no, I wasn't really initially trying to like throw Ben. But yeah, Ben comes in and Ben wanted to get in and out because he had a crew with him. He had his wife and he had some training partners and whatnot. And Yance came in for the most part by himself. And I was like, hey, Yance, can we knock this out real quick? We only have to ask him a couple few questions. Because granted, in all fairness, our questions for him were more involved because we just saw Ben. So it was a matter of let's get Ben in and out, and then we can get more in-depth with Yancey. And Yancey was wonderful and generous about it. And a lot of fighters, I mean, that's the worst thing you want to hear when you're cutting weight, when you maybe want to just sit in your room, watch TV, and not talk to a soul. Last thing you want to do is jump through their hoops. And, you know, the UFC fighters are the cream of the crop when it comes to paying attention and doing that sort of stuff. Thank goodness I knew this gentleman that sat in my lap.
I just want to say there is a prominent UFC official sitting on Ken Hathaway's lap. Oh, not Ken Hathaway. Cold coffee. Damn it. I broke it.
You broke the seal.
It's not Ken Hathaway. It's
there
just cold
just
coffee.
There was just random-ass dudes sitting in front of us. So we thought you were another one.
Wow, things are getting rough. One of the oldest bars in the world. Andrew Jackson used to drink here.
That's true.
You shouldn't be. By the way, you shouldn't be talking if you don't want to be
identified. I was like, can y'all recognize his voice? I was going to turn the mic.
That's it. Done.
And then that's how quickly they hop off my lap.
We may prominent UFC official maybe bleeped soon when we go edit in here in a few minutes. We'll see. Last thing. Well, it's not live,
no,
but we're taping
it's
it.
Live
but we, but
to
we
tape.
Just it's oh, live to tape.
Mean
I mean,
to sit back
we don't
my
edit.
Here,
we don't edit. We just throw it down like it is.
They all know why we care.
Okay, so there we go. All right, last thing I want to talk about before we like just turn this insane night into whatever it's supposed to be. Matt Mitrione.
Yes.
Matt Mitrione's a fun guy because it's somebody that we've kind of all watched grow up in front of our eyes. I mean, we've seen his entire career play out in front of us. Started out as I don't want to say it would be wrong to say a joke. I mean, his nickname's Meathead,
and he did tell that story about Meathead was what given by his old high school football coach.
That's right.
You know, which if people didn't know, that's pretty fucking hilarious. And if you can hit him up on Twitter, hit whatever, say explain how you got the nickname. It's a funny story.
I think everybody thought Rashad gave it to him, but that's not actually how it happened. Like he had it before. So, but the funny thing is about Matt is. He's actually become a pretty decent spokesman. Like, he's actually become pretty wise in his words. And I thought, again, his pre-fight stuff was great and you know, talking about what the fight with Rothwell means and where it could catapult his career and all those things were great.
And he weighed in one of the subjects that if people go to MMA Junkie, they'll see. Is like, he weighed in one of the subjects this week was talking about managers.
Yeah.
And whether the lack of a manager or whether managers
well,
are still
well, that's exactly
relevant.
Where I wanted to go with it. I mean, the whole thing is, I mean, I thought his interview was great, but I thought the best answer that he gave us all day was the manager question where we said, listen – with this Reebok deal in place, now that, you know, you don't need to fight for money anymore, the money's there automatic, do managers still have a place in the sport?
Yep.
Do they still matter? Because we've heard some fighters say, I don't need a manager anymore. Then we've had others say, no, I'd like to have a buffer between me and the UFC, which I think is a very reasonable take as well.
Sure.
But then Matt Mitrione says, listen, no, I definitely don't need a manager because I can secure my own sponsorships. I don't need anybody else. I can do this. And
in fact,
I've gotten the most prominent sponsorship in my career right now via Twitter.
Yeah.
With Wingstop.
Well, in fact, he said like that was the reason why he got rid of his manager, was like, hey, if they can't bring in the sponsorship deals, I could do this myself. He's like, I'm done. And that was the first fighter that I think we've heard, as many as we've asked. We've asked actually probably a good 10 or so fighters. Mm-hmm. Everybody's been either on one side or the other, but this was the first fighter that we heard that actually said, this is why I've gotten rid of it, and this is why. And he's been better for it.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic. I mean, Richard Goodman is getting fired up over here, man. He's a matchmaker. I just heard him say you need a manager. If the matchmaker says you need a manager, you're screwed.
I have 24 fighters on an individual card that have no business negotiating, and then I get pissed off at them, and I just kick them off the card. I get mad at your manager. It don't matter. I'm still going to like the fighter. So you need – in the NFL, why would you have a manager in the NFL?
And that's what I think
is
the point.
True. And I wonder, you know, because
– that's what I think is the point.
I think the audio
– yeah, we'll see how much it picked up.
I wonder if maybe I'll go hit the pisser, because this is Roadshow Live type of shit. Let's put him on. Let's get him to say that in general while he hit the pisser.
Okay.
And then we'll
hand him the headset.
That.
Hand him the headset. We're just going to roll live here. You're going to hear a little shuffling, a little moving.
And a little smoking.
A little smoking next to it. All right. So, Richard Goodman, matchmaker, Touchy Palace Fights. Again, big breaking news coming soon. I can't reveal it. I can't reveal the details. But trust me, when the big breaking news happens, you'll love it. All right. So, you're a matchmaker. You're saying a fighter needs a manager. And I would say it's funny because I would almost, thinking selfishly, if I was in your shoes, if I was in your point of view, I'd almost think I don't want that guy to have a manager because that manager is going to be smarter. He's going to be more business savvy. I can hose that fighter. I can, you know, work certain things. You're saying they should have one.
Oh, 100% they should. Coming from a matchmaker's perspective, I only deal with certain managers on my show because I know they understand the business. I don't have to sit there and argue with them about stupid points, about $200 or something like that. Fighters don't understand it 100%, the business part of the fight game. So, therefore, you know, if I'm going to argue with the fighter about money, I'm just going to tell him to screw off and I'm going to go get another fighter.
Right.
But I can argue with the manager all day because I'm going to still need all his guys. He's got 40 guys. I'm going to need to use the other 32, 33 guys. So even if I get mad at him, I'm still going to be his friend the next day.
Yeah.
Because it's business.
And see, that's what I see almost as a point. Like, you need a little buffer between you and the promotion to just say, I just think that you need, you know, again, you don't want to have a personal conflict or whatever. It's more just like, listen, I'd like this guy to represent me. You know what I mean? I'd like this guy to just go in there and fight my battle for me. Like, you know, if I'm a USC employee or a USC contractor or whatever, you know, whatever it is, however you want to frame it, I want to still have a good relationship with them. But I think as a person, like if you're a fighter, you could be like, well, you know what? I'll sacrifice a few dollars here because I want to keep my relationship strong. Whereas the manager says, I don't give a damn. My job right now is to go in and be that bull, that ram.
Exactly. And so they're going to take all the heat that the fighter doesn't have to take. He's still going to look like the good businessman when the fighter comes out to show up and perform. Even if you fought with that manager 30 times backstage before you got that contract, the fighter doesn't look bad. It's the manager that takes the heat for it. If you're a fighter, like I said, even in the big shows, you're probably, if you're arguing with individual fighters, eventually you're going to get cut because they're not going to want to deal with your shit.
Right.
You know, and so that's the way I look at it too, is I only want to deal with a certain few guys rather than deal with 24 guys on my card that are all crying, complaining, think they know what they're doing when they really don't know anything. And you need a manager to build you up to that point. So if you're going to be a loyal fighter, you need to stick by this guy who's helped you get to that point. So loyalty is very important to me in the sport. And that's why a lot of people have been in the sport for such a long time, because they've been loyal.
Yep.
And they've been loyal to the company, to the manager, to whoever helped get them to that point. I mean, I look at it in any other sport. An NFL player, now the way it's the structure set up, if you get drafted at 1, 2, 3, 4, your pay's already set. There's no negotiating the contract anymore. So why would they have a manager?
There's no reason.
But why do they have him? Because they don't want to be the bad guy sitting in the office arguing with the NFL guy. You're not going to be a player arguing with Roger Goodell.
Yeah.
You're not.
That's the biggest thing I see.
You're not going to do it.
Give me a little buffer.
Give me the guy that looks like the asshole and be the asshole and fights for you, because they're still going to respect the manager because he's got 60 guys in the company. Malky, any of those guys, they hold pool regardless. So if they fight for one guy, they're going to fight for all of them. They're not going to just cut his entire roster.
Let me put you on the spot. I know that it's not your position. It's not your job to do this, but you've been around the business for a long time, and I know you know the business as well as anybody. I've heard insane differences in rates from like 5% to 10% to 20%. Knowing now that UFC fighters especially, and again, we're not talking about Tachi Palace for a second, we're talking about UFC, but I know you know the game. Do you have a figure that you think is fair for considering what managers can do now? Because again, sponsorship dollars, not to say that sponsorship dollars are gone. No. Now you just need to get creative. If you're if you're going to activate, if you're going to figure out a way, you got to be creative. Mm-hmm. But it used to be that whole thing where you just call the t-shirt company, you call this. But so all these things aside, if anybody's listening this long,
20%,
they must be hardcore. 20%? You think 20%
is
still fair?
Exactly reasonable.
Yeah.
Because of the work that you've put in. Either way, you make $100,000 in a fight and you're paying a guy $20,000. Like I said, if I had $20,000 and put in an investment and you told me I'm going to give you $100,000 back, are you not going to take that deal?
I'd take it.
Any day of the week.
Yep.
So what you're getting for the value that you're gaining from this individual who's putting in the work for you, not to mention setting up seminars. You're as a fighter, you don't know the first person to call to go do a seminar in Texas at an Air Force base.
Fair point.
You know? So these are the things that these guys aren't looking at the big picture, where this person's making you money constantly on constantly.
Prominent UFC official can say anything he wants.
Exactly. This guy's the man over here. He is the man. But like I said, you need the –
So you're saying the manager is there to help follow up, to do the accounting,
exactly.
to do the –
the UFC is guaranteed that you're going to get paid within X amount of days versus you negotiate a deal that may or may not actually get paid on. I know that I read a lot of tweets of fighters unhappy that they never got paid actually on the deal.
Yeah.
So you're there to negotiate a deal. You're there to guarantee a deal.
Exactly. And who?
There's no negotiating. There's no nothing involved with you are going to get $2,500 10 days from the event.
But my thing is, too,
prominent
is
UFC official has weighed in.
If we're
not allowed to put him on
wasn't, mic. If it wasn't for the manager building that relationship over the last 10 years with the UFC, where would that fighter be?
I agree.
Because as a matchmaker, I can make anybody undefeated and get him to the UFC.
All right, should a manager get a part of a fight night bonus?
Yes, 100%. Because you wouldn't have been there if it wasn't
– prominent UFC employee. Prominent
you would have never been
official.
There if it wasn't for the manager that got you that contract in the first place.
All right. Because I love prominent UFC official, I'm going to look out for the well-being of prominent UFC official, and I'm going to wrap things up because that's what we're doing.
You know,
but you know
guaranteed
what?
Money, but hey, like I said, how many negotiations have you done in contracts?
There are ghosts now walking by us. Shit is just getting crazy. You can't
get rid of your manager. Go right ahead. But let's see how much money you make in the long run.
I love it.
When it comes to renegotiate your contract and you have no idea what you're supposed to be doing, and now you're telling the UFC, I want $100,000 a fight when you're only worth $40,000, but you think you're worth more, and now you pissed off a guy, you think they're going to give you what you want? But now if you got 60 guys in the UFC and they don't want to upset you too much because you're bringing value to the company.
Now you're leveraging the
now
other
you're leveraging
59
them.
Guys yeah, or
exactly.
whatever.
Exactly. And so you have that leverage, just like Drew Rosenhaus and these other guys in the
– prominent UFC official wants to weigh in. Prominent UFC official should stay away.
Yes, because. yes. Because financial advising
– What? No, no, no. Prominent UFC official. All right.
No.
Enough is said. All right. Listen, this has been the MMA Roadshow.
Cheers.
We have frosty beverages in hand. These things
Cold.
Need to be consumed.
I'm
sure the bars will be closing soon or not because this is New Orleans.
Never.
It's fantastic. Listen, UFC Fight Night 68, Saturday night, Tim Boach, Dan Henderson. The card's a sneaky good card. Whether or not you love the main event, I think if you look at the matchups top to bottom, yeah. Richard, you and I were talking
like
about
said,
earlier.
Pick a knockout of the night bonus.
Man, just fantastic fights.
Seven
top
guys
to
on
bottom.
The card could all get it.
A lot of good fights. I think everybody's going to love it. Again. Follow us on Twitter at MMA Junkie John, at Ken S. Hathaway,
The
MMA Roadshow on Instagram. Again, TheMMARoadshow.com on iTunes. Follow the MMA Roadshow. Subscribe to it. Review us, please. Help us get that love. There's really just nothing else to be said.
We're sorry for this.
Again, yeah.
They better support this show.
the disclaimer is this was either the greatest show.
You tell me any show
or
that's going to be sitting in New Orleans having beers on the strip. You tell me one company that's going to be doing that. Nobody does it like John and his company.
That's it. That's how we roll. So it's either the best show we've ever done or the worst show we've ever done. Either way, it's a show, and we're going to call it. And prominent USC official needs to stop talking over here, or
hey,
he will never
outsmarting us here. Hey, you're fired from the podcast.
No, prominent USC official needs to be quiet. Yeah. We may get a home. Fucking terrible.
Hey, regardless of who you had in the co-host seat, they would talk about the stench. But eventually your nose gets used to it a little bit.